In this coming week's parsha, we have a story about the Makalo. So man who comes, gets into a fight with someone, curses out God, and the people don't know what to do with him, so they grab him, bring him to Moshe. Moshe throws him in jail, not knowing what to do. And then he ends up, God comes to Moshe and tells him we should stone him, and they take him and they make a public stoning of this man. The question that I want to address on this topic is the following. Why is this story written in the place where it's written? Meaning, if you look on my source sheet, I gave you an outline there of what stories occur in Sefer Vayikra. And if you look, there really aren't any. The entire Sefer Vayikra are lists of rules. We start out with Karbanos, we move on to the Karbanos of Chanukah and HaMishkan, we learn about Kashras, we learn about women who give birth to children, people with Saras, all types of Tumah and Tara issues. We really don't have any discussion of a storyline. There's no narrative when it comes to Sefer Vayikra, except for two small stories, one being the story of Nadav and Avihu dying, which connects to Chanukah HaMishkan, because that's when it occurred. And the only other story that we have is this story of Makalo. So the question that you have to ask is, why do we have, first of all, a story in the middle of Sefer Vayikra that doesn't seem to fit with Sefer Vayikra at all? It seems to fit maybe in Shemos or maybe in Bamidbar, but we really don't have stories in Vayikra. So why do we have a story in Vayikra? And number two, this story is so unusual in that it doesn't fit anything having to do with Vayikra. There's no rules in Vayikra of what happens if you curse a person or if you curse God or if you curse your parents. That's all not found in Vayikra. That's found in other places, in Shemos, but not in Vayikra. So the question is, why do I have a story in the middle of Sefer Vayikra that, first of all, doesn't seem to fit with Vayikra at all? And on top of that, the theme of the story has nothing to do with Vayikra whatsoever. So the question that we have to figure out is, what is the significance to this story that we find that it's placed in the middle of Sefer Vayikra, a place where it doesn't seem to belong at all? In order to answer this question, I'm going to take three very different approaches as to how to go about to answer such a question. Approach number one is a very simplistic approach, which is look at the story itself and try to figure out what is the major point of the story, and that must be the way to get to the answer to the question. So the most simplistic way of looking at the story is, what is the major lesson of the story? Obviously, the major lesson of the story is, don't curse God. If you curse God, you die and you get stoned. That seems to be a fundamental lesson that God is trying to teach us. If that's true, and if that's the lesson of the story, then why is it stuck in the middle of Vayikra? And why is it put in story form, as opposed to the rest of Vayikra, which is laws? So why don't we just have a pasuk that says, if you curse God, you die? Which, if you look at the original, if you look at the story, pasuk tzayim, that's exactly what it says. V'nokei shem Hashem l'gimah, ragom yirgimuloto, yirgimulbo, kolei dach, agerkez dach, v'nakbo shem yumah. If somebody curses God, you stone him. Why don't we just have that pasuk listed? Why don't we need a whole story to tell us a halakha? Again, when Sefer Vayikra doesn't seem to have stories. So possibly, again, in this very simple approach, is as follows. I said the story already. I can say it again, which is, a man curses God, and the Jewish people grab him, take him to Moshe, and Moshe puts him in jail, not knowing what to do, and then they kill him. We don't know what he says. We just know that he goes and curses God. And we'll go through the text of the story if you go along. Okay? So the question is, again, if all we're trying to do is to teach the lesson of don't curse God, why do we have this story for? And the answer might be very simple, which is, if you say a pasuk, don't curse God, right? So, yeah, we listen to it, pay attention to it for a second, but it doesn't really get us. We have a list of lots of halachot, and sometimes you don't necessarily know, oh, I really must pay attention. But if you take a halacha and you make a story about it, and you make such a crazy story about it, where this guy did it and we stoned him to death, well, now we know, take a second, look at this halacha really closely, and take it to heart. On top of that, what do? We put it in Sefer Vayikra. Why? Because Sefer Vayikra, it doesn't belong there at all. So we take a story that, again, we take a halacha, we put it into a story to have a major effect on us, then we take the story and we put it in a place where it doesn't belong whatsoever, in order, again, to have this message of, pay attention to this halacha, this is a very important halacha. So possibly, it's out of order, it's out of place, on purpose, because God was just trying to make a point that this is a halacha that is really important, that one should really pay attention to. That's a very simple approach as to why this story seems to be so out of place. Let's go into approach number two. Approach number two is basically where you want to look at the greater context of what's going on in order to understand this story. If we look back in Sefer, as we've already said, there really is no narrative except for the small narrative of Nadav and Avihu. So if we want to go back to see where we're up to in the storyline, we got to go back to Shemot. So what's the last story, the last narrative that we have is the story of Chayta Eyal. What's the story of Chayta Eyal? We have a group of people that got together and they wanted to make some trouble after Moshe was up on the mountain and didn't come down. So they start probably bad-mouthing God and saying some bad things and trying to rile up a crowd and get a riot together. And they gather more and more people, and more people are getting excited and upset, until now we have a large group of people who come over to Aaron all mad and all upset about some issue. And then they end up, the end of the story is, we serve Avodah Zarah, we serve an Eyal, and we do this massive sin. Well, if you look at our two stories, there's a lot of comparisons between the two. The Makalel sounds like the beginning of the Chayta Eyal story. But we have this guy who's having a problem, and he tries to rile up a crowd. He doesn't curse God in his house. He doesn't do it privately. He's doing it in public. He's trying to get people mad, and he's probably trying to get people to agree with him and to come together and have some sort of riot against God. But there's a major difference between the two stories, which is in the story of the Makalel, do we join the Makalel and start getting mad at God and start serving Avodah Zarah? No, exactly the opposite. What do? Is we grab him and we say, we won't tolerate you, and we bring him to Moshe, we throw him in jail to keep him away from everyone else, and we say, this is not to be tolerated. You can't say these things about our God. The exact opposite of the story of the Eyal, where we were tolerating it, and we did allow people to say those things, which led to a much worse sin. So the question is, in our two narratives that we have, which seem to come one after the other, because again, this story of Makalel is the next story after the last narrative that we have of Chayta Eyal, there's a major transformation in the relationship of the Jewish people to God between the two stories. In one, we don't stand up for God and we end up serving Avodah Zarah. And in the second, we stand up for God and we don't tolerate this man and we throw him out. So the question is, how did we come from this terrible sin of Chayta Eyal to the story of Makalel, where we stand up for God and we feel very firm in our relationship with God? So in order to answer the question, we have to look at what happens in between. Well, in between the story of Chayta Eyal and the story of the Makalel, we have Mishkan, we have Korbanos, we have all the stories that we just went through before, the holidays, we have the halachot of Kedoshim Tihyu Havdi Holi. So how does that answer our question? How did we go from Chayta Eyal to the Makalel on such different connections to God? Well, if you take the understanding of Chayta Eyal, that the issue of Chayta Eyal is that the Jewish people heard God speak and they couldn't relate to God. It was very difficult. There was nothing physical for them to hold on to. There was nothing that they could relate to and worship and have some sort of connection to. So the Jewish people had a problem. So they go to Aaron and they ask for a physical manifestation of something. Something we can worship, something we can touch, something we can hold, something tangible. And that was the problem of Chayta Eyal, because they picked something that was tangible and they decided to worship it. So what does God do as a reaction? He sees that this is a problem. We need something physical. We need something that we can worship, but yet still be worshiping God. So God gives us the Mishkan. And according to Rashi, the Mishkan really was a bidyavad. It happened after Chayta Eyal, because God saw that we couldn't handle the relationship that we had until now. So he gave us something that we can connect to. He gave us the Mishkan. After the Mishkan, he gave us Korbanos, a way to directly serve God with something physical, something that we can touch and say, with doing this, we are now serving God. He gave us the Yom Tovim, where we visit God three times a year in the Shlosh Regalim, where we can say, look, we are doing something where we are visiting God and having a relationship with him. And then, of course, we have the rules of Kedoshim Tihyu, where God says, you are special, you are holy, you are my special nation, and these are the ways that you should be separate, and this is the ways that you should be holy. Following that story now, I think our story has a major significance. Once we now have all these rules that help us connect to God and help us physically relate to God, now it makes sense that we have a same opportunity of sin again. The Makalel comes, tries to rile up a crowd, but this time what do? We say, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to succumb to this. And instead, we're going to grab him, throw him out, dragging him, probably kicking and screaming, saying, we won't tolerate you. And we don't just say, be quiet, we don't want to listen, go away. What do? We grab him to Moshe to get rid of him, and then we stone him to death. So what that shows to us, if we're looking in the content, in context, it sounds like our Makalel story is not just a random story set in the middle of Vayikra, but rather, in a lot of ways, it's this major event that happens in Vayikra to show the change of relationship between the Jewish people and God. There's a lot of proofs that we can bring to this analysis of the text. Number one proof that I gave to you, I apologize, these sources are slightly out of order. If you go to, I believe what's yours, page 3, I gave you two columns where I compared the two different versions of the Esaras HaDibros. There's twice in Torah where we list the Asar HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, once in Shemos Chaf in Parshas Yisro when they're given to us, and the second time Moshe recaps them in Devarim Perek Hei in Parshas Vayeshlach. And when you look at the two versions, and you see because I highlighted it, there's a lot of differences between the two versions. Some small differences, where it's just a word here or a letter here and there, where some Mefarshim pick up and draw major conclusions from that, and some people just say that there's nothing to learn, it's just a slight difference. But there are major fundamental differences which I highlight, which I underline for you. The one that's most famous, of course, is when in the Halacha of Shabbos, when in Shemos it says Zachor and Pasachet, versus in Devarim where it says Shamor, which two different words are used. But there's another fundamental difference in the mitzvah of Shabbos, where if you look in Pasuk Yud Aleph, when it's describing why we should keep Shabbos, in Shemos it says, Ki sheshes yamim asah Hashem es ha-shamayim ves ha-aretz ves ha-yam es kol shabam, v'yanach v'yom ha-shvi, arkein be'rach Hashem es yom ha-shabbos v'yikachehu. What's the reason we keep Shabbos? We keep Shabbos because God created the world. In Devarim, however, why do we keep Shabbos? So if you look at Pasuk 10 Vav, V'zacharta ki evet hayita ve'eret mitzrayim, ve'otiyacha Hashem alokacha misham biyad chazaka, u'bizroi netuya, akein tzivcha Hashem alokacha lasod et yom ha-shabbos. We keep Shabbos in Devarim because God took us out of Egypt, and we were slaves in Egypt, and God saved us. Two very, very different reasons why one should keep Shabbos. Again, in Shemos, because God created the world, and in Devarim, because God took us out of Egypt. Two other smaller, but yet I think important differences between Shemos and Devarim is that in Devarim we have two phrases that are inserted that are missing in Shemos. One is the phrase, Kasher Sivcha Hashem Elokecha, just like God commanded you, where if you look, it's in Pasuk Yud Bet, when we're talking about Shabbos, Shemor Yom HaShabbos Akacho, keep Shabbos, Kasher Sivcha Hashem Elokecha, like God commanded you. And in Pasuk Tet Zayin, when discussing Kibud Av V'Em, it says, Kabedes Avicha V'Asimecha, Kasher Sivcha Hashem Elokecha, just like God commanded you. On top of that, in the rest of that pasuk, another phrase is added, Laman Yitav Lach, in order that it be good for you, if you look at that pasuk again, Kavedis Avicha Vesimecha Kasher Sivcha Hashem Elokecha, and then it continues, Laman Yarichun Yomecha, that you'll have a long life, Ulaman Yitav Lach, and that it will be good for you. And that phrase is missing from Shemos. So the question that has to be asked when learning the Asaras HaDibros is why are there these differences between the two? Now there's major discussion on this topic, and I just want to pick one answer that I happen to really enjoy in order to help us prove the point that we just made about Makala, which is as follows. If you look at the Ibn Ezra that I gave to you, Ibn Ezra has a fascinating line in his Perush HaKatzar on Shemos. He says, "Ulefi da'ati shebarisho nimnachtavu aseres hadavarim kasher heim ksuvim beparshat vayishama." It should be on page 3 for you, right after the. "Ulefi da'ati shebarisho nimnachtavu aseres hadavarim kasher heim ksuvim beparshat vayishama uveshnaim kasher heim ksuvim beparshat vayechanan." He thinks that the first version that we have in Shemos reflects the version of the Asaras HaDibros that we were given before Chetah Egel. The version in Devarim reflects the version that we were given after Chetah Egel in the second Luchot. So the Shemos represents for us the first set of Luchot, and Devarim represents for us the second set of Luchot. If that's true, then obviously the differences between the two represent the difference in relationship between us and God from before the first set of Luchot to the second. And again, the difference between the two are the Chetah Egel happens in between. So once again, as we've already said, if the issue of Chetah Egel is that we felt that we lacked this physical connection to God and we needed some more personal connection to Him, then it would make sense, if that's true, that that should be reflected in the differences between the two sets of Luchot. So if again we look at the differences, I think now it becomes clear what the differences are for. In the first set of Luchot, the reason for Shabbos is because God created the world. That has nothing to do with the Jewish people, that has to do with mankind as a whole, created the world for everyone. Sounds like the first set of Dibros is really meant for all of mankind, but yet all of mankind rejected it, and therefore only the Jewish people were the ones who were given the Asaras HaDibros, but there doesn't seem to be any personal connection to them. The second set of Luchot seems to be very different. Why do we keep Shabbos? Because God took us personally out of Egypt. There's a personal connection to us. Why do we keep Shabbos and keep it up? Because God commanded it to us. Why is it that we keep giving our names? Because it's good for us. God is trying to personally connect with us in the second set of lufos to try to show us that there's now a new relationship that we have with them, which is more personal and much more one that a person is much more able to relate to. And therefore, once again, what we see is that there's a change in this relationship, which is reflected in the lufos. Also, we see in the halacha of the Mishkan and the Korbanot that therefore brings us to the point of our story of Makalel, and therefore can help us to understand why the Makalel fits in perfectly at the point where it is right there in Sefer Vayikra, because it's at that point that the text is trying to show us that this new relationship is successful, and we are able to stand up to this Makalel. I think furthermore we can see that in back in our story of Makalel. Now let's look at the text inside. Go back to page 1 where the story is. If you look at the psukim itself, the psukim are really quite strange. The start of Pasuk Yud, which is where the story begins, it introduces us to who this person is, which we're not going to be discussing right now. He gets into a fight in the field, and he Pasuk Yud Aleph Vayikov Ben Ha'isha Ha'Yisraelit Et Hashem Vayikalel Vayavilo Tala Moshe V'Shemi Moshlomi Batibi L'Matadam. This man goes and curses God, and they bring him to Moshe, and they tell him, happens to be his name, his mother's name is Shlomo Batibri, and she's from Matadan. What happens to him? They stick him in jail to figure out what to do. Then what happens? God comes and tells Moshe what to do. You should take him out of the camp, and everyone should put their hands on him, whoever saw what or heard what he did, and then everyone should stone him. So can continue. Now you should teach publicly the halacha that anybody who curses God, just like this guy, he will also carry his sin. And if you curse God, you will die and we will stone you, whether you are a convert, whether you are a citizen, the same halacha will apply to you. Now what happens is very strange. What should happen next is Pasuk Chaf Gimel, which is, let's do the Chaf Gimel first. Vayidaber Moshe et Bnei Yisrael, vayatziyo et ha-makal, mechutz l'machaneh, vayigimu oto even, u'Bnei Yisrael osu kasher tiva Hashem as Moshe. The Bnei Yisrael do what God says, take him outside and they stone him. That should have been next. What happens next, though, is a few psukim Yud Zayin Shechaf Aleph, which seem to have no connection to our story whatsoever, and not only no connection to our story, no connection to anything having to do with Sefer Vayikra. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ve'ishkiyah kek hol nefesh adam bo imah. If you kill someone, you should also die. Umaka nefesh behema yashamenu nefesh tachas nefesh. If you kill an animal, you have to pay one life for another. Ish ki yatei mum ba mitok asher asa ken yaselo. Anyone who harms someone else, we do to him what he did to them. You get kind of what you give. Shever tachas shever, a fracture for a fracture. You break someone's arm, we break your arm. Ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye, shein tachas shein, tooth for a tooth, kasher yatei mum ba adam ken yatan mo. If you give an injury to someone, we give it back to you. If you kill an animal, you have to pay. If you kill a person, you die. This one rule for everyone, whether you are a ger or a citizen, because I am your God. These psukim do not, I think pretty obviously, do not seem to belong to our story. It's not talking about cursing anyone, it's talking about hurting and killing. We really have no idea why they are stuck here. Not only do we not understand why they're stuck here, as I already said, as now you can see, these have nothing to do with korbanos, it has nothing to do with Mishkan, it has nothing to do with holidays, it has nothing to do with Tum and Tara, it really doesn't belong in Vayikra at all. So the question is, where does this whole episode belong? And in order to really understand why they're doing here, we probably have to understand, where should it have been? Where would it have made sense? Well, if you look just again in our story itself, which is talking about cursing, where is the only other place in Tanakh that we discuss cursing, not Tanakh, Torah, where we discuss the halacha of not cursing? And that happens to be, if you look, I gave you a whole chart here now, you could look at, I believe it's your second page, back again, where I have a structure between Parshas Mishpatim and Vayikra Chaf Dalet, where all these halachot seem to be stolen right out of Parshas Mishpatim, where you would have expected all of these things to be in Parshas Mishpatim. Because in Parshas Mishpatim has the pasuk, Elohim lo tikalel, u'nasib am kol teor, don't curse God, and don't curse your leaders. Followed by that, would have made sense for us to have the story of Makala. Not only that, but all the halachot that we just read that don't seem to make any sense in our story whatsoever are all found in Parshas Mishpatim. And I gave you a structure here which will show it. I'm going to read the Parshas Mishpatim side because I just finished reading the Vayikra Chaf Dalet side. So first we have the pasuk that I just read, Elohim lo tikalel v'nasiv am kol teor, in Parak Chaf Bet of Shemot, which is again the only psukim that we have about cursing God or cursing leaders, which would have made sense that our story of Makala would have been written there. We also in Parshas Mishpatim have a major theme all the time, and we'll see two different psukim that I gave you here, of the concept of a ger and a convert being treated nicely and being treated equally, which seems to have been mentioned in our parak here, where we were saying all these halachot seem to apply equally to a ger and to an ezrach. In Parshas Mishpatim, the first one that I gave you was the ger lo tonev lo tchatzenu ki gerim ha'itim eretz Mitzrayim. Don't oppress a ger, basically because you used to be a ger yourself in Mitzrayim. We have the same concept of this, if you kill an animal, nefesh tachas nefesh, all in Parshas Mishpatim. I gave you here in Perchas Aleph, Pesach Chav Gimel of Shmos, ve'im ason yeh nevenatata, nefesh tachas nefesh. Word for word, exactly the same phrase. We also have, if you look at the next source I gave you, Pesach Chav Dalet, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yad tachas yad, same halacha. What happens if you injure somebody, you injure an animal, you injure a person, what happens to you? All written in Parshas Mishpatim. And then again, at the end, we have this focus on ger lo tilachet, back, just like what we do, as we mentioned in our Pesachim Gerim twice. And what's fascinating is both Parshas Mishpatim and our entire story of Makalel is both followed by the halachos of Shemitah, where if you see here parallels in your chart, we have in Shemos, Perchav Gimel Pasuk Yud, V'shei Shanim Tizra'at Arzecha V'asatis Tu'atecha, for 6 years you plant your field, and then of course it goes on to say, on the seventh year Tishbos, you should rest. So too in Vayikra, following our story, Shei Shanim Tizra'at Arzecha, 6 years you plant your field, and then Pasuk Dalet, Shabbat Shabbat Tov, the seventh year we rest. So we have almost the same structure found in our little section here of Makalo that we had in Mishpatim. It's kind of like we have a synopsis of Mishpatim just stuck here right in the middle of Sefer Vayikra. So the question, of course, is, why would that be? Why are not all these halachos in Shemos, in Parshas Mishpatim, and why do we have any of them here? So based on the understanding that we just said, which is the Makalo, shows this new connection that we have with God and this new reestablishment of a relationship with God that we destroyed by Chetah Egel. It actually makes sense that Mishpatim, which was given right before Chetah Egel, kind of gets reviewed a little bit. It kind of shows us we're restarting the process. We're starting all over, starting from fresh. So what do? We're not going to repeat all of Mishpatim, but we're going to kind of take a little synopsis of Mishpatim and stick it in to show, look, redo, re-over, right, we're starting again. So we have a new connection with God. We're getting Mishpatim all over again. We give for sure Shemitah over again, because Shemitah is the epitome of Amunah and Hashem and a connection to Hashem. You don't just let your field go for a year, assuming you're going to be able to eat, unless you really feel that God is going to provide for you. We re-give over this mitzvah, showing again our reconnection to God, and that is how Sefer Vayikra is being structured. And I think through that, we can really see an answer to my original question, which is why is Makalel stuck in the middle of Sefer Vayikra, which seems to have nothing to do with it? And we end up saying with this approach, it not only has nothing to do with it, it has everything to do with it, which is basically the Makalel is the climax of Sefer Vayikra, which is Vayikra is showing us how to establish a close connection to God, how to establish a relationship with God, and giving us all the types of rules that we need in order to have this relationship. And the Makalo story is showing us it worked. This is what happened. We had another almost Chetah Egel. We had another guy coming to start trouble, and we rejected him, and we rejected him quite outrightly again. We drag him to Moshe, probably kicking and screaming along the way, and we throw him in jail, and then we stone him to death. That is the new relationship that the Jewish people have with God, which was able to be established through all the laws of Sefer Vayikra. That would be approach number two. Approach number three is not to look at the context, but rather to look at parallels. Are there other stories in Tanakh that have something that reminds us of our story of Makalel? And based on understanding their function or why they're where they are in Tanakh, we can then take that answer to shed light on our answer. The obvious famous parallel story is the Moshe, which I'll get to second, which is the man who gathers wood on Shabbos, and we'll get to that. But the other story that I'd like to start off with is the story of Parshas Balak, the story of Bilam and Balak, where Balak tries to hire Bilam to curse the Jewish people, and he's very unsuccessful because God does not let him curse, instead he makes him bless instead. Now, why is this parallel whatsoever? Obviously, the storyline has nothing to do with our storyline in the Makalel, but there is a major parallel, I think, between the two, which is if you look through Sefer Shmos and Bamidbar, which is all our narratives, it is very clear that every single story has the same theme. It's talking about the Jewish people on their journey from Mitzrayim to Israel and all the things that happen to us along the way. The main players in every single story is Moshe and the Jewish people. Parshas Bilam is very strange. It has nothing to do with the Jewish people. We're not in the story. We not only are not in the story, we don't even know the story is happening. We're not anywhere in the text. We have three prakim all of a sudden in the middle of Sefer Bamidbar where we don't fully understand why we have three prakim telling us a story about a random guy who's trying to hurt us, but yet doesn't get to. And the question that you have to ask when you're reading, say, for Parshas Bilam, is you have to understand, why is it there? What is the purpose of the story, and what does that come to show us? And maybe through answering that question, we can reflect back on the Makalah. Because again, the Makalah has the same question of what is it doing in Vayikra. It has nothing to do with the storyline or the laws of Vayikra. So the first answer that I wanted to take for Bilam does not help us so much to answer my question, so just bear with me, because I think it's a very interesting approach to Parshas Bilam, which while I'm talking about it, I wanted to say it. But it's using the same approach that we just used for the Makalah, which is again looking at the greater context of Sefer Bamidbar to understand why it's very possible that instead of Bilam, the story of Bilam looking like this weird story that gets stuck in, it could actually be a story that's one of the major focuses and something that really helps us to understand Bamidbar as a whole. Well, how can I do that? Well, if you look at Parshas Bilam, it's actually put, or Parshas Balak, I should say, Bal Bilam, it is put at a very strategic point of Sefer Bamidbar. We are basically just about to start the second generation stories in the text. How do I see that? If you look at Shalach, right, we send the Meraglim, we send the spies, we're told the first generation that came out of Mitzrayim is going to die out, and we're going to have a new generation, the second generation, going to Israel. Then we have the story of Korach, where we have a rebellion, sounds like the first generation rebelling, and we have more people dying out, fulfilling this, you know, the promise of Shalach that everyone's going to die out. Parshas Sukkos come, and we have Aaron giving over his coat and his clothes to his children, to his son, sorry, Elazar, showing again him giving over, the next generation is starting, and Elazar is going to be one of our main leaders. Then we have Parshas Balak. Following Parshas Balak, we have Pinchas. Who's Pinchas? Pinchas we know is from the second generation. He is the son of Elazar. He comes up in Sefer Yeshua. He comes up in Sefer Shoftim. We know him to be someone who is part of that second generation and in a leadership type position. Therefore, it would make sense that since we, before the story of Balak, we have the introduction of Elazar as a leader, after Balak, we have the introduction of Pinchas as a leader, that we're about to start the discussion of the second generation. And therefore, maybe Parshas Balak is the introduction to the second generation. So why would that be the make sense for it to be the introduction to the second generation? Well, if we take a step back to what happened earlier, I think we see a lot of parallels between what happened earlier to the story of Bilam. Okay, so I'll find it when I get there. Until now, we had a story of the Jewish people going down to Egypt. They got enslaved by a king who didn't like us very much. And the pasuk tells us why didn't he like us. You look at the pasukim that I did give you, so let me find it where it is. It is on page 3 of your source sheet. On the bottom, okay, we have a major parallel that comes up between the story of Paro and the story of Balak, which is we have two kings and both of them are not happy about the Jewish people and they're very nervous that the Jewish people are going to affect them in some way. Why? Because we're very large in number. If you look at the Pesukim, the parallel, the language is extremely parallel, where in Bamidbar it tells us, Vayar Balak ben Sipor, Kol Asher Asa Yisrael Amori, Balak sees all the things that the Jewish people did when we killed out Amori, Vayagar Moav Lepnei Ha'amo'od, they get very nervous. Why? Ki Rav Hu, because we are many. Vayikatz Moav Lepnei B'nei Israel, and they were distressed by us, they were nervous about us. The same exact language was used by Paro before the whole enslavement of the Jewish people, where we have in Shemot Aleph, Vayakam El Chadash, this new king comes. But Yomer Alamo, who says to his nation, they are many. And then at the end, we have the same language, like a pasuk yifet, Kasher Yanu Oto Ken Yarbet, the Ken Yifrot, but Yakutsu with Nevin Israel, the same language, they were distressed by the Jewish people. So we have a parallel of a king of a very powerful nation, scared by the vast number of Jewish people that are living or coming close to them. What does each of them do that's also very similar? Instead of doing what's normal, starting a war, fighting us, doing something of that sort. Both of them decide to come up with some sort of plan to outsmart us or to hurt us in some way outside of the normal way that people fight us, which is through weapons. What does Paro do? Haman is Fakmalo. He comes up with plans of throwing the babies in the Nile River. He comes up with plans to enslave us. So too Balak, what's his genius plan? Get Bilam to come and curse us. It's a very different approach as to how to get the Jewish people to stop being a threat to them. Of course, the end is also the same, where God does miracles in order to save us. The Midrash also parallels these two stories very much, where if you look, I'm going to skip the next few sources, if you look at the top of page 4 for you, the Gemara in Sotei and Aleph says as follows, Amara Fia Bar Abba, Amara Simai, Shlosha Hayuv Osa Eitza, talking about Paro's Havan Ischak Malo, when he's trying to figure out what should he do to hurt the Jewish people and to make sure that they don't become a threat. So there were three people that he asked advice from. And our number one person is, fascinatingly, Bilam, the Eov Yisrael. And the Gemara tells us of Bilam Shia Eitz. The idea that a Paro used to hurt the Jewish people was Bilam's idea. Well, now we're in the story of Balak. And what does Balak do when he wants to hurt the Jewish people? Goes to the same guy, goes to Bilam. So we have striking parallels again between the beginnings of the Jewish people and the first generation, and what happens to the first generation. And now we're starting again, second generation going into Eretz Yisrael. We have a similar story that happens then. We have a king, wants to hurt them, wants to kill them out, goes to Bilam for advice, how to help, and Bilam's going to try to help to hurt us. And of course, God intervenes and saves us with some miracles. However, the differences are extremely striking as well, which is in the story of Mitzrayim, we're talking about a large number of years, 210 years that we're in Mitzrayim, and then we get saved. And the story of Bilam sounds like maybe it's a few months. Right? It took a little while for Bilam to travel and the messengers go back and forth. Maybe we're talking about a month or two, the entire story. On top of that, in Mitzrayim, we get miracles that everyone hears and sees, and we're freed from being slaves, as opposed to the time of Bilam, where not only are we free, again, as I said before, we don't even know that this is going on. We don't even know that the miracle happened for us. We have absolutely no idea. So the question is, why, if we have this interesting parallel, what, again, is the significance to the story of Bilam and Balak? And I think it may be very clear that what God is trying to do as an introduction to the second generation is start us off in a similar fashion in order to show us the difference of the different relationship he's now going to have from now on. To teach us a lesson that God will always be with us, and God will always save us, but from now on we're going to have a different relationship. It's going to be more natural. It's going to be more, it's going to be less obvious. It's going to be much more in a teva way than it was before. And we see that throughout the second generation, right? We see that there are parallels, like Yehoshua splits the sea, just like Moshe splits the sea, right? He splits the Yarden, like Moshe split the Yamsuf. But it's not the huge miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yarden is a quieter miracle. We have hail that falls down, the Makkah of Barad, when Yehoshua is fighting Givon. But we don't have 10 Makkos, we have one Makkah that occurs with Yehoshua. We have the miracles that are similar to what happened in the first generation, but yet it's always to a lesser degree. It's one step down. The Jewish people in the Midbar get man falling from the sky. Time of Yehoshua, we're going to start planting. We're going to start living a natural life. It's the introduction to this new generation. Parshas Bilam is coming to tell us that now God is still there. He's still going to help us, but we're not going to see it as clearly. We may not even be aware that it's going on. And that is a new relationship that God is going to have with this new generation and from us from now on, where he's much more hidden, he's much more in the star than he was before. And I think there's a very fascinating parallel that in your next sources that you see that helps to bring down this idea. Where if you look in Bamidbar Chafbet, when it's describing the angel that stands in front of the donkey and scares it while Bilam is trying to meet up with Balak, it describes the angel as Malach Hashem Nitzav Baderech Becharbos Lufa Biyado. There was an angel standing in the way and his sword was drawn. This language is used also in the time of Yehoshua. Again, Yehoshua being the leader of the second generation, and if Bilam is the introduction to how God is going to relate to us in the second generation, it would make sense that the same way that he relates to us in Bilam would be the way that he would help us out in Sefer Yehoshua as well. When before Yehoshua is about to enter Yericho, the exact same thing. He's on the way, and all of a sudden he bumps in, he meets this person, who's an angel, with the same language of his sword drawn in his can. So we see this parallel again to show us that maybe the significance of Parshas Bilam, again, is not this random story in the middle, but maybe it's this fundamental introduction to what's about to be majorly different between the Jewish people and God from now on in the rest of Tanakh, which is we've now changed our connection with Him a little bit. The first generation is gone, the generation of miracles, the generation that could clearly see God, spoke to God, and we are now moving on to the second generation, which needs to know the message that God is always with us and God is never going to leave us and He's there, but we're not going to see it as clearly. And maybe that is the message of Bilam, which is why it is stuck exactly in that place, and that is why we have such a focus on Him, three Prakim, in Bamidbar. Yeah. Why this change? I think very clearly, I mean, God can't have a relationship with the people where He just shows miracles all the time. I don't think that was an ideal that God was ever looking to do. It always seems like when He first begins anything, when He first begins a relationship with Abraham, it is much more He talks to Abraham way more than He talks to Yitzhak and Yaakov. Meaning, His point is not to have a relationship where He is involved every moment of every aspect of what we do, which is what He was like for that first generation. He has to establish a relationship, and in order to establish a relationship, He has to clearly be there that we can relate to Him. But then He wants to move aside and have us live our lives and live in Teva, and to still see Him in the Teva. I think that was just the order which God has chosen. The second answer to the question of Bilam, that will relate right back to Mimikala, which is, again, my question originally was, why do we have the story of Bilam that appears in the middle of the stories of the Jewish people going through the Midbar? And I think maybe Bilam is there, the story of Bilam, to answer a very fundamental question that I know it always bothered me and probably bothered a lot of you. Just if you look through Sefer Shemos and in Bamidbar, and I gave, Bamidbar, you always have the question, which is, why is God still with us? Why does God care about us? Why did God long time ago say to us, enough, you complain too much, you're done, next, move on to someone else. Right? If you go to just Bamidbar, Perakid Aleph, Medonim, we complain, we don't like traveling, we're tired, we don't feel well, we don't even know exactly what the complaint is, it's not in the text, because they're just complaining, we don't know what they're even complaining about. Then we have the Asasuf in the same parak, they're complaining they want meat. We have man, but no, we want meat, we want to eat, better. Then it does Gimel, we have the Meraz, and we send spies. Now they don't even want Israel, which is the thing that we've been looking forward to this entire time. Then in Perakid Dalet, we have the Mapid, the people who go into Israel, even though God said not to, and God has to end up killing them as well. Parashat Zion, we have Korach, a whole rebellion against Moshe, getting really mad at us. It's not your source sheet you're looking for. I'm just reviewing for you, Sefer Bamidbar. Right? Then we have Korach, who is rebelling and wanting to overthrow Moshe and overthrow Aaron and doesn't like the whole system that's set up. Then in Parashat Zion, the Jewish people complain to Moshe about, why are you killing out all the other people? Because they were killing out Korah. And then in Bamidbar Chaf we have, they complain for water again, which of course happens, and Moshe hits the rock as a result of that. We are just complaining over and over again. Parashat Aleph, we complain for water again. We don't have water once again. And then of course at the end of Bamidbar, Parashat Hey, where we do, we start doing not good things with the women of Midian in public, and we have the whole, display of Kazvi and Zimri, we're serving Avodah Zarah. You ask by the end of Bamidbar, which is, why do we deserve Eretz Yisrael anyway? Why are we going in? It makes no sense. And you have a very negative outlook onto the Jewish people as a whole. And that becomes a problem when you're reading through Sefer Bamidbar. And I think it's very possible that Parshas Bilam comes as a way to fix this problem, which is sometimes you forget that these stories are really just talking about groups of people. They're not talking about the entire Jewish people. We're talking about a small group of people, which means that the rest of the Jewish people are doing good things and they're following God. But there's nothing to write, like, the Jews are good. How many psukim can we have of that point? Right? That would be pretty boring. So what does God do? He takes the story of Bilam and Balaam, and what is the point of the story? The point of the story is Bilam's reaction. He looks at the Jewish people, and what does he say? Ma tovu alecha Yaakov. How beautiful are the Jewish people? How wonderful are they? We need an outside perspective to tell us what we're kind of missing when we read through the Sefer, which is, no, the Jewish people really are great. The Jewish people are wonderful. We just are focusing on small groups of people. And if that's the answer to why we have Parshas Balak, possibly that could also be the answer why we have Parshas the story of the Makala, which is our story, which again, as we just finished discussing our new connection with God, and before we go back to all of the problems in Bamidbar, we have a story to tell us of the wonders of the Jewish people, how connected we are to God, and how insulted we were for God because somebody decided just to curse Him a little bit. And then I think that makes a wonderful, gives a wonderful answer to the question of why the Makala story is written at all. Why don't we just have the rule, don't curse God? Well, it makes sense why we have the story, because again, the point of the story is not just to teach us this halacha. The point of the story is to give us this new outlook of, wow, look at the Jewish people, look what they've come from. They came from Egel, and we're going to go and see groups of them that are doing bad in Bamidbar, but look at the story of Makalo, and look how wonderful the Jewish people are. And I think from there we can move to our last parallel, which is the story of the Mekoshes. We have a story in the beginning of Bamidbar, Perek Tedvav, which I did give you, I believe should be the end of your source sheet now, a parallel between Bamidbar Tedvav and Vayikra Chavdal. We have the story of somebody who went out into the field, decided to gather wood on Shabbos, and the exact thing takes place. It is so parallel to our stories. I bolded all the words for you on the text that is parallel, and I'm going to read through the story of Bamidbar Tedvav. Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar v'yitzu ish mekoshe shitzim b'yom ha-Shabbos. The Jewish people were in the midbar, and they find this person who is gathering wood on Shabbos. V'yikrivu oto kol ha-motzim mekoshe shitzim al-Moshe v'al Aaron v'al kol-Eda. Exactly like our story. They grab him, and they bring him immediately to Moshe and to Aaron. What does Moshe do? Vayinichu otov b'mishmar, puts him in jail once again. He lo poreish mayasalo. He doesn't know what to do. Just like in our story, Moshe didn't know what to do. So what does he do? Sticks him in jail. Same language. Then, of course, who comes to tell us what to do? God. Vayom Hashem Moshe. Exact same thing. Mot yumat ha'ish, ragom otov b'avanim, kol ha'idam yichutz ha'machaneh. Same exact answer. Kill him, everyone should go outside and stone him to death. And then the pasuk at the end, which of course parallels to our last pasuk, Vayatzi'u oto kol ha'ida, v'mechutz ha'machaneh, v'yirgilu oto b'avanim, v'yamok ha'sher siva Hashem es Moshe. They take him outside and they stone him to death just like Moshe commanded. Exactly parallel to our story. So another parallel, which is interesting to note about this story, is again, this story you can ask the same question, which is, if we wanted to teach Shabbos, which we do, right? So we have many psukim that tell us, don't be Mekoshe Shabbos. And if you do, you get problems, right? Or you could have had a pasuk that says, if you are Mekoshe Shabbos on Shabbos, then we will stone you to death. That's what we could have had. But instead we have a story. And we have a story that's very similar to our story, which had the exact same question, which is, why did we need this in a story? And what is the significance to the fact that we didn't just learn the halacha, but rather we're learning it in the story form? So instead of being halacha, which is different, right, one is talking about gathering wood and one is talking about cursing God, right, both of them to be an important point, but yet again, we could have just learned those points by saying, don't curse God and don't gather wood. The other two details of the story maybe is what we're supposed to learn now. And what are the other two details of the story? So number one is the detail that the Jewish people grabbed him and brought him over to Moshe. I'll get back to that in a second. And the other detail that's very parallel between the two, the only other detail of the story is Moshe puts him in jail because he doesn't know what to do. And maybe there lies a message in that. I mean, that may not be the focal message of these stories, but I think there's a message that God is trying to prove in these two stories, having that detail included. And I think that message is really the humanity of Moshe, which is, and however it is that you want to understand the leadership of Moshe throughout, whether it's positive throughout, whether there's a little bit of failure in some of the stories, I think here is a very clear message that Moshe is human. Sometimes Moshe doesn't know what to do. And you can also take that, I think, in a more positive fashion, which is as follows. There's a lesson that I think that comes up numerous times in Tanakh, and I'll bring it in two different places, where God kind of gets, I don't know if nervous is the right word, but a little bit concerned that the Jewish people are going to mistaken and think that Moshe is really the one who's doing all the miracles and not God. Because the person that we see on a day-to-day basis who's telling us, you know, I'm going to split the sea, or God's going to split the sea, he's the one that then goes and does it, or he's the one that seems to be the one that could get all the credit. And therefore, possibly, our story here is every once in a while, God does something to make sure that the people know that this is not all Moshe, this is Moshe as a representative of God, and really God is the one telling us to do everything. And therefore, there are times where God makes it that Moshe just doesn't remember what to do, or doesn't know what to do, so that Moshe Dafka, in front of everyone, has to go ask God the question, so that Moshe can publicly say, well, we have to ask God, I don't know. So then we go and we ask God, and then it's very clear to everyone that God is the one who's behind everything. And we see this message in other places as well. I gave you two sources at the end of your sheet here, the Kliyata Rabbeinu Hanana, in answering a very fundamental question where there are many answers to this question, but theirs relate to us, as to what Moshe did wrong when he hit the rock, right? We all have that question, hit the rock, what's the big deal? You know, what's the difference? And talk the rock, hit the rock, why was he told to take the stick if he wasn't supposed to hit the rock? What's the, lots and lots of questions on that topic. The Kliyata Rabbeinu Hanana had very interesting answers that have to do with what we were just talking about. The Kliyakar, I'm going to read pieces of it. I'll start from the beginning of the Kliyakar. Binyan Feta Tahu, when it comes to the sin of the hitting, Kimasina Lachazal, the Kriyat Yam Sukitiv, He takes us off of the topic a little bit in order to get to his answer. He says, it happens to be, if you look at the story of Priyas Yamsuf, God says to Moshe, raise your stick, but then stretch out your hand, which is very strange, because why does it say hand? It should have said, stretch out the stick. Sounds like, take the stick, but then don't use the stick, change to your hand. And that's what he's saying. This language of lifting the stick is not to use it, but rather to remove it. Take the stick, raise it up, publicly show everyone, I'm not using it, put it down, stretch out your hand without the stick. Because what was God worried about? The people, there were some people that had this suspicion that possibly all the miracles Moshe was doing was not from God, but rather was from the stick. And there was some sort of magical power in the stick. Because the people saw every time Moshe did a miracle, he had the stick in his hand. So possibly there's only power in the stick. There's no God. Moshe is kind of pulling a fast one over us. That is why God says, raise the stick, show them you're not using the stick, use your hand to prove to them that this is really not from the stick, but rather from God. I'm going to skip to the next paragraph. That's the third to last line. Yisrael, shenikra hayam. It's been a very long time since they split the sea. V'dor zeh lo yadu im asa Moshe hanesahu biyado o b'mateo. And this generation doesn't know anymore if the power is from his hand, you know, being from God, or from the stick. They might have thought that since all the other miracles were done with the stick, that also Priyas Yamsuf was done with the stick. They won't remember that it wasn't. And now, when God said to him, don't use the stick, talk to the rock, and instead, when she used the stick, now he reintroduced the suspicion of the fact that maybe God is not behind all this, maybe it's really just the stick. So the Kli Yakar is an interesting view where, again, he sees that there is a possibility that God does things on purpose to show the Jewish people that really the things that are happening to them are not from other things. So in this example, it would be that it's not coming from this magical stick, but rather it's coming from God. Well, how about our story, which we're talking about, not from Moshe, but rather from God? That we see clearly in Rabbeinu Chanana, where he thinks the sin is slightly different. But Hakarokun Hadvarim Shenam Rubazet, who told Litchot Hashoel, Him Devei Rabbeinu Chanana Shechetav, Ki Hachetu Amram, Haminatela Hazeno Tzilachemai. He brings up the opinion of Rabbeinu Chanana, who says that the sin is what Moshe said when he said, Haminatela Hazeno Tzilachemai, from this rock, we will bring you water. He should have said, Yotzi Hashem Lechemai. God will bring you water, not we will bring you water. Kederach She'amru, Mitzayt Hashem L'kol Ba'erev Basar Le'achol. Like he said when he was going to, right before, after they complained for meat, and he's telling them that God is going to give you meat, he clearly says, God is going to give you meat. V'chein V'kol HaNisim Yodim Ki Hashem Yaseh Imahem La'afliya. All the other Nisim, Moshe clearly states that God is going to be doing it. V'ulay Chashvu Ha'am Ki Moshe Ba'ar M'chachmatam Hodziya Lahem Mayim M'chatzal HaZeh V'zehu Lo Kedash Lamush. Maybe the sin of hitting the rock was that Moshe made them think possibly that Moshe was the one who was doing this miracle and it wasn't from God. So we see clearly here God reacted in a very negative fashion if that is what the sin is. He told me he can't go into Eretz Yisrael, which is a tremendous sin, all based on the fact that Moshe maybe gave a misconception that the power wasn't from God, the power was really from him. And therefore maybe we can claim that the reason why our stories are put into stories as opposed to just telling us the halacha of the Mekoshesh and also the Mekala is because we're trying to give over this message that to realize the smaller message that Moshe is not the one who's behind everything. God sometimes has to step in and tell us what the halacha is. So since we wanted to teach the halacha anyway, we put it in the story form because that's the story that happened, and we put it in the text this way to also teach us this message. But I think the main message, we go back again to the line that I skipped before, which is, what is the other parallel between the two stories? It's the part of the story when this person sins and the Jewish people gather together and they grab him and they bring him to Moshe. In what we've been discussing this whole time, I think the message is clear, which is just like in the story of Bilam and just like in the story of Makala, where we have two very positive stories about the Jewish people, showing us that in a time where somebody is sinning or somebody is doing something bad in the Makala story, we grab him and we give him over. And so too is the story of the Mekoshesh, right? Somebody, this time he's not cursing God, he's not doing what we would call a fundamental sin. I mean, yes, he's being Makala Shabbos, which is a tremendous sin, but you can see how that's a little bit, maybe we wouldn't be so appalled, we would just say to him, please stop, put the wood down. But no, what do we do instead? We get so upset by this man, we grab him again and we bring him over to Moshe. And maybe again, the theme of the Makala, of course, and as well the Mekoshesh and the Bilam as well, is that we have these three stories put in our Svarim, one in the end of Vayikra, which is when we establish our connection with God, we put in the story of the Makala. Then as Bamidbar is going on and we're losing focus on why the Jewish people are so great, we stick in the story of the Mekoshesh. And then when we start to lose focus again because we're sinning so much, we stick in the story of Bilam. All with the same message, which is there are lots of Jewish people out there who are doing tremendous things. There are lots of people out there who are, you know, zealous for God and who are following God beautifully, and we shouldn't lose focus that throughout the Jewish people keep sinning in Shavuot. They keep singing in Bamidbar. But remember, we're talking about smaller groups. And yes, that makes a big impact, and that gets us punished, and gets us into lots of trouble. But the Jewish people as a whole are Matovu Alecha Yaakov, are beautiful and are wonderful, which we can learn out again from our story of the Makala. So just to sum up what we've done, we ask the question when it comes to the Makala, why we have this story written in a weird place which it doesn't seem to belong. We either said you could just look at the story itself for the simple message of the story, which is don't curse God, and we therefore put it in a weird place on purpose so that we would pay attention to it. Or possibly, if we look in the context of the story, we see how it fits beautifully where it is, and it's actually the climax of the story, where we went from Chet HaEgel, we got a whole bunch of halakos that changed the relationship between us and God, in order to be able to get to the point of the Makala, where now we can prove that this new connection has been reestablished, and we now have a new connection with God. We then went to a third approach of looking at parallels in Bamidbar, to show us that this message that we have at the end of Vayikra continues out through Bamidbar, where we have this group of people, or maybe even majority of the Jewish people, who really are connected to God the whole way through. And they're the Jewish people that are the reason why God continues with us and calls us His Am Kadosh and continues to take us into Eretz Yisrael and have a relationship with us. I hope through this we've seen a significant to a few psukim that we have in this week's parsha really help us to understand all of Vayikra and all of Sefer Bamidbar. Thank you very much.